Blog Talk Radio.
We own this country. We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Good evening. Welcome to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you are listening to your Culture Vigilante Hour on Missouri Grassroots Radio. It's bright 5 days before Christmas. I can't believe it, and I've done something a little unusual tonight for the show. I am sitting, I'm not in my office anymore doing the radio show. I am actually sitting in my living room. I have a fire roaring in my fireplace. I'm sitting by my Christmas tree, which is all lit up in LED twinkle lights. My dog, Hermione, the liberty-loving Labrador, is laying at my feet sleeping, and I'm sipping on my raspberry tea. As I come to you tonight, 5 days before Christmas, very happy to be here with you with a great show lineup for you tonight on Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is kind of fun, doing this from my living room. I've never done this before, so this is kind of different. We're trying to bring a little Christmas atmosphere into the Christmas time. We're doing our Christmas show from my living room, so this is kind of cool. A few things. I'm flying solo here tonight. Dave, Mr. Hour of Truth, is off at his grandson's Christmas concert, enjoying some family time with his family and his children and his grandchildren, enjoying a great Christmas concert as are often put on at Christmas time in the local public schools. And Cindy McGee is not with us tonight. I did want to make an alert you to something that happened to our friend Cindy. As you know, Cindy McGee has been co-hosting the show with me the last few weeks, and we have we will be putting her on the air hopefully with us again after the first of the year. She'll be hosting her own show here on Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock. But Cindy's family suffered a tragedy last weekend. She lost her son over the weekend rather suddenly. And our hearts and our thoughts and our prayers are with Cindy and Chuck McGee tonight as they mourn the loss of their son. And we just want them to know that the Patriot Movement is out here thinking of them. And we're looking forward to her return. And if you have a few minutes of your time, please say a prayer for Cindy and her family. And her daughter-in-law Toby, she is survived Cindy's son is survived by a wife and 13 children. They had a blended family, I believe, of yours, mine, and ours children, and they all need your thoughts and your prayers tonight. And hopefully, Cindy will be back with us again very soon. I did want to let you know also that the family is taking memorial donations for the widow and the family at United Bank of Union, 15 East Main Street, Union, Missouri, in the name of Doug Mackey, the Doug Mackey Memorial Fund. So if you have a few dollars to send this holiday season to relieve a little stress and a little grieving for that family, we would really appreciate it. And again, our thoughts and our prayers are with Cindy and Chuck McGee this evening, and we hope that Cindy will be back with us again real soon. Tonight's show is all about education. You know, I'm kind of an education wonk. I homeschooled both of my children, had my early experiences. The reason I homeschooled them was because I had my early experiences in the public education situation with them, didn't really like that very much, and kind of became an education wonk after that, spending so much time educating my kids. And we all know that the state of public education is not good right now. We have a lot of proposed education reform going through the Missouri legislature as they try to solve those problems, and as they've tried to solve these problems across the country. We know that public education is just hurting. It's not really going anywhere anytime soon, to where I can see where it's going to get fixed anytime soon. And we've also been talking about Agenda 21. And the last several weeks, we've been very fortunate to have an Agenda 21 expert with us, Ray Cuneo, and he'll be with us again tonight. He's going to be with us tonight and talk about the links between Agenda 21 and how that has kind of crept into your classroom, and how your children are being indoctrinated into the ways of Agenda 21. And, you know, all of these things are a process. You know, you've got to get cultural buy-in, and we know that we can always get cultural buy-in if we start at those early levels, and we absolutely do see that happening in America, schools all across America, with all of the buzzwords and all of the things that are linked to Agenda 21 being taught to your children on a daily basis, and you don't even know it. So we're going to talk to Ray in a few minutes and have him explain all that to us. And after that, we'll have a great discussion with the ladies from Missouri Education Watchdog. Gretchen Logue and Ann Gassel will be with us. Those two ladies know more about the educational system in this country and all of the things that are wrong with it and some of the things that are right with it than I think anybody on the planet. These ladies have done more research. If you've never had an opportunity to go to Missouri Education Watchdog and read their blog, that place is just a wealth of information about all of the details on Common Core standards and all of the educational reforms that are kind of being pushed down our throats and how they are not serving American children and or the educational process in any way, shape, or form, and how your dollars are kind of being thrown out the window, and how the educational bureaucracy is just sucking that money right out of our tax system. First, I think what we'll do this evening is we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back and hear from Ray Cuneo, and then we'll finish the evening up with the ladies from Missouri Education Watchdog. Take a listen to this information right now.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is your Culture Vigilante Hour. We're here 5 days before Christmas talking about education and Agenda 21 tonight. And like I said before, we have some great information from Ray Cuneo, more on all of the buzzwords about Agenda 21 and how that is creeping into your children's classroom and how your children are being indoctrinated into accepting Agenda 21. Take a listen. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio, and we're here once again with Ray Cuneo to help us connect some more dots with the education issue and Agenda 21. First of all, it's right before Christmas, and we won't talk to Ray again before the holidays. Merry Christmas to you and your family, Ray.
Well, and the same to you and all the listeners out there.
So, Ray, we're here. We've been talking about all the various aspects of Agenda 21, the sustainable development, the land, the wildlands projects, all of the issues as they relate to property rights. And, you know, as we all know now, Agenda 21 is far and vast reaching into our lives. But there's a conditioning sort of aspect to this. Agenda 21, the education system is not free from Agenda 21, as we know. So we'd like to maybe talk a little bit about, we've talked about some of the buzzwords, Common Core Standards that are part of Agenda 21, International Baccalaureate, all of those kinds of things that relate to Agenda 21 that we, you know, need to be aware of that are happening right underneath our noses. Let's talk a little bit about how Agenda 21 has filtered into the education system and has kind of been indoctrinating us over the generations.
Well, you know, and you're right, Lisa, we've really focused on land use, resource use, because those things are pertinent to people's changing lifestyles, and if you control those things, you control people. But fundamental to this whole Agenda 21 process, from the beginning, and I'd say from the beginning, starting when it was Americanized, that is, Agenda 21 here in the United States, with the President's Council on Sustainable Development, which originated from his executive order in 1993. The President's Council on Sustainable Development was directed to establish goals and principles to carry forward with the goals and principles and agendas as delineated by the UN Agenda 21. But at the same time that that was going on in 1994, there was a parallel process occurring in the Presidio in San Francisco, and it was the I think it was called the National Forum of Partnerships Supporting Education about the Environment. And they developed, they were charged with developing a blueprint to support education for sustainability. And the outcome document was, I just so happen I have one. It is called Education for Sustainability, an Agenda for Action. That's Education for Sustainability, Agenda for Action. And that has been the principal educational document moving forward in our education system at all levels over the last 18 years. And it was designed, this document, this education document that I just referred to, was designed to parallel the implementation of the President's Council on Sustainable Development's seven task force reports. Those task force reports, and I think we've talked about them maybe on a limited basis before, was, sustainable agriculture, eco-efficiency, energy and transportation, population consumption, sustainable communities and natural resources and so on. All of those goals and principles that the President's Council worked on, they were then, after they set those principles and goals, the implementation of it, of those goals and principles, was to be designed and carried forward through the education process, which came out of this document that I had referred to as the Education for Sustainability. Now, this document is about an 85-page document, but it goes through, and we don't have time today to go through all of it, but It has four or five chapters, and it focuses on formal education. And under formal education, they have action items like green schools, models and approaches, professional development, essential learnings. That's all under formal education. Then you get into non-formal education and you go to public awareness, sustainability for extension network, community visioning and assessment, workforce development, lifelong earning, and so on. Then other chapters get into how it dovetails and works with state and federal agencies. It talks about action items like multicultural perspectives and global perspectives and so on. But it definitely leaves the theme, this whole education process. The theme is that they want to focus that education for sustainability is a lifelong process. And I would say, and Lisa, you're probably being more an expert than I am on education and what's going on in that area. I would say that from my perspective, and I was the president of the school board, and I've seen back in the early, what was it, about 1990-something when I believe it was Missouri Senate Bill 380 was passed. And we've seen a lot of this stuff come forward through that process. But also I sat on soil and water boards and other commissions and so on at the state level and local level. And one thing I noticed that really the universities, I believe, really started prior to the elementary and secondary education. The higher education, and my feeling there is that it was key because that's where your teachers come from. That's where your educated planners come from that then permeate not only your local schools with the teachers and the goals and philosophies they've learned regarding sustainability, but also then when you get into the green planners, and I've mentioned this before, the green planners are the ones that are being hired by local government, and they have master's degrees in urban planning and all of the other facets of sustainable development. So I think the key thing is to get the teachers and get those out there and then filter down into the elementary and secondary education and the curricula. So
this is really kind of, it's the blueprint for Common Core Standards, which is what we have now across the country and certainly in Missouri here, where we have government controlling the curriculum for education. But you're suggesting that it's not coming first from the children's education. It happens, the brainwashing and the indoctrination has happened in the colleges and the professionals to go out and to produce and to support the indoctrination of the youth.
Well said, and that was well put. That's exactly right. And again, my feeling there is let's just take a teacher that is, well, I won't say close to retirement, but has been around a good number of years and may not buy into a lot of this malarkey on sustainable development. She's not going to be, he is not going to be as effective in teaching the youngsters in that school, even if you have the textbooks there and everything, as effective as a new, go-get-em, fully charged, passionate, university-educated teacher that's coming out there and really believes they're going to save humanity and save the world, and walks into that classroom, and of course the youngsters sitting there, regardless of what age, are going to sense that passion. And then, of course, if you can put the textbooks in their hands and the teaching curriculum and the teacher, I mean, it's there. They will sense the passion. So I really believe, now, hey, listen, it's been 18 years. I mean, this was the initial phase, I believe. We're now seeing a lot of teachers, good young teachers out there, well-intentioned, I'm sure, and think they're really doing right. They've been educated and probably in those jobs for, who knows, could be 5 years, 10 years, could be new. They're continuing to come in. But you go back to that older teacher who is probably now retired or close to it, they're going to phase out. So, as I said, this education for sustainability, they consider it education to be a lifelong process. And so then, of course, you know, we're talking now about formal education, but you can get into the whole area of education on a non-formal basis as we talked. You know, and I sat on a soil board for 8 years, and I went to a lot of seminars, conferences,
right,
visioning processes, so on. And again, the focus there was to hit, regardless of what your age was to bring you into the orbit of leading that Agenda 21, was the only thing to save humanity and the right way to save our country and resources, et cetera.
Right. And I too sat on a school board for a while about 12 years ago, and I do remember part of that process was kind of an indoctrination by the state. The state requires that you go through a school board training, which is put on by the state, to initiate, you know, the mindset and the thinking of how you have to operate through the laws of the state and what's dictated there. There's not a lot of individuality that goes on, or there's not a lot of individuality promoted, you know, to the school board members to go in and lead independently while you sit on a school board. So all of these things that are coming down from the government, you're pretty much indoctrinated and encouraged to kind of go along with the plan. And as we know, folks have been watching curriculum for years and years and years and understanding that history is being rewritten and that agendas are being changed, and we're getting away so very much from the three R's in schooling, and we're being taught our kids are being taught a lot of other things that don't have anything to do with basic reading, writing, and arithmetic kind of things. And you know, all of this is coming out in the culmination now, what I believe is the Common Core standards that have been forced upon us by the Department of Education from on high.
Well, you're absolutely correct. You mentioned the three R's. That's interesting because I just happened to notice in this book that I've read a couple of times now, and I'll quote, it says, many educators are helping society achieve sustainability by teaching the three E's, environment, economics, and equity, along with the traditional three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic. So see there, they're bringing in a whole new set of standards, a whole new set of concepts, meaning, and again, we've talked about in previous segments, the environment, we've dwelt on that, the land use, et cetera. We've dwelt on the economics, and of course the idea of economics, environment, and equity all tie together and overlap and where it overlaps, that's the ultimate goal of government, to say that is sustainable. And the government wants to be the one and only one to say what is sustainable and what is not sustainable. Another interesting real quote, find it here interesting, in the introduction in this book, and I think this is real telling, the very first paragraph, and I'm quoting, today's educators face a compelling responsibility to serve society by fostering the transformations needed to set us on the path to sustainable development. The time has come to ensure that the concepts of education for sustainability in the broadest sense are discussed and woven into the framework upon which current and future educational policies are based. End of quote.
So basically, that's just a guideline for let's weave indoctrinating principles into our curriculum so that that's what our children are hit with every day. And I'm a homeschool parent. I homeschooled my children from very early on. And, I mean, I can tell you, folks, if you're not familiar with, if you send your child to an institutional school and you're not familiar with the content of the curriculum that they're being exposed to every day, you are not the person who's molding and raising up your child with the mindset that reflects your values. The schools are doing that, and I can tell you, I was very careful to choose curriculum that I brought into my house as I homeschooled my kids that reflected my values. That, you know, and if it didn't reflect my values, it was going to be good conversational material so that we could have discussions about why we disagree with or why we agree with certain things. You're not there every day to have those conversations with your kids. That's why it's so important for you to be involved and engaged in your local schools and in your classrooms and to know the content of the curriculum that your kids are being exposed to, because this has been going on for generations of young children's minds are being hit with this every day, and I'm telling you, that shapes the way they think, regardless of how much influence you think you have at home. When your child is spending 8 hours a day at a school, and the teacher, who is the authoritarian figure in the classroom, is telling them that sustainable development is the way of the future, and it's the way Americans think and work and what we need to work toward, that's the way they're going to grow up to think.
And that's well said. That's exactly right, Lisa. The other thing is, you know, it's very subtle a lot of times how, the curriculum is one thing and what they're taught in that, but it's very subtle about a lot of time on these environmental issues, how kids are influenced. I've noticed, even on soil and water, we had youngsters come through and we discussed, issues on soil and water and the environment. But so much of the time that the federal and state agencies that were involved, whether it was Missouri DNR or the Conservation Department or at the federal level, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, Interior, all of these that were trying to maybe not come into the classroom per se and put out materials, but in different forms to get it into the hands of youngsters. The underlying theme wasn't that, agriculture is just, the underlying theme was that agriculture may not be a good steward of the environment. That was the theme, that there's always something wrong with the way the system is working now, the free enterprise system, or the way modern agriculture works, or how whether we should use our resources. Are we not protecting, and again, this ties into what we've covered before, are we not protecting our water resources? Are we not protecting the endangered species or the clean air? It always leaves a theme that we are a bad society now, and we have nothing to do but to get better. And we need to go from here, and everybody accept the same theme of sustainability. And not that we can't, as a society, improve those areas. I'm not saying that. We all want to be conscious of being good stewards of the environment. But it leaves the impression to the youngsters that the only source that can take care of this is the government. And the complete control of government, of all of these resources, is the only thing that will assure that.
Right. And you can be darn sure that part of the Common Core standards and part of the sustainable development curriculums that are slipping into your schools do not include logic and critical thinking skills for your children to question why. That has long since left the curriculum of institutional education, folks. So,
I think that you hit on a key point here, critical thinking. People at all ages don't seem to think anymore, but certainly the children. I mean, critical thinking, questioning, is a vital part of becoming a well-rounded, intelligent individual that can understand and what society is, what our founding fathers had envisioned for this country. But of course, the kids are, as you said, the kids are influenced to not question. Just assume that things are bad, and people and society and the business world and the free enterprise system is bad, and government needs to be the one to protect you. And of course, we can get into this whole area of risk management. I think that is something we can talk about later, the precautionary principle, and it's pervasive throughout all of society. Government wants to take risk away, any risk at all, away from people and say, look, we will make your life happy. We will make your life risk-free. Just do what we say. And it's throughout, whether it's the education system, all the way down to workforce, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely. Well, Ray, I mean, this is such a critical aspect of, and certainly an issue near and dear to my heart, the educational part of it, because really, if you control the education, you can get through, you can put through anything that you want. So I think this certainly deserves some more discussion. We thank you for being with us today, Ray, and we won't talk to you again before Christmas, so we wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and we will certainly take up all of these issues again in the coming year of 2013, and we so much appreciate your contribution to us at Missouri Grassroots Radio here and here on Culture Vigilante in 2012. You've just been so enlightening, and we just want to thank you for everything you've done.
Well, and thank you for having me, and it's been a pleasure, and we will continue into next year. These issues aren't going to go away, and a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to everyone.
Great. Thanks, Ray. We'll talk to you soon.
Just once again, want to thank Ray Cuneo and all of the information that he's been bringing to us here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition. And the risk management issue, I mean, we haven't talked anything about what happened over the last weekend with the Sandy Hook shootings, but one thing that has come to mind, and I wasn't going to elaborate on it very much, but one thing that's come to mind in this entire situation is it's the risk management. We all have this mindset, or I don't know if you've been watching the coverage, we all have this mindset that we have had a terrible tragedy here, and it is a terrible tragedy, but we have to fix it completely. There has to be 100% fixing of this problem, and the people of America think that when something bad happens, you have to find a way to fix it completely. And one of the problems that I've had with the reporting and the coverage on this is, And you knew the minute that it happened, there were going to be gun control issues coming out of everywhere. But the fact is that every aspect of the coverage is how do you fix this problem? And you can't. You cannot fix every aspect of every problem in the world. You know, you can always strive to make things better. But again, it seems that all roads lead to Agenda 21. All of the aspects. Are all of the agendas coming out of the Obama administration are all connected to Agenda 21? We see it in every aspect of our life, and our children are being indoctrinated into Agenda 21. We're going to come up here in a few minutes. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to have to talk to Ann Gassel and Gretchen Logue, and they're going to outline some things for us about Common Core standards and the educational reform. Again, you're going to see all of this in Agenda 21. So let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with the ladies from Missouri Education Watchdog.
This is the Grassroots Minute. Everyone knows that the city of Detroit faces a major financial crisis, but one member of the city council thinks President Barack Obama should step in and help. Nearly 75% of Wayne County voters pulled the lever for Obama in November. And according to Detroit Councilwoman Joanne Watson, President Obama owes the city a government bailout for supporting him in the 2012 election. In a recent council meeting, Watson said,
"After the election of Jimmy Carter, the Honorable Coleman Alexander Young, he went to Washington, D.C. He came back home with some bacon.
Right.
That's what you do. That's what you do. Our people, in an overwhelming way, supported the re-election of this president. And there ought to be a quid pro quo, and you ought to exercise leadership on that. Of course, not just that, but why not?"
No, Councilwoman Watson. What you do is stop with the handouts for paybacks and work together to lower taxes and bring business back to Detroit and once again make it the great manufacturing mecca it was. And this is why conservative sites are suggesting that Mitt Romney may have been correct in his assessment that Obama won re-election because he gave voters gifts. I'm Terry Barner for the Grassroots Minute.
Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order.
Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour, and we're talking education here tonight, and we're talking Agenda 21. We have with us tonight two of the most well-informed ladies about the educational issues across the country. We're lucky enough to have here blogging with us here in Missouri, Ms. Gretchen Logue and Ann Gassel. And welcome, ladies, and Merry Christmas to you both, and thanks for being with me tonight.
Merry Christmas, Lisa. Great to be here.
Yeah, thanks, Lisa. Merry Christmas to you, too.
So we just listened to a very interesting interview with Ray Cuneo. There were a lot of I should have taken notes. We don't have enough time to go through all the aspects of the things that he touched on here. But the indoctrination process is alive and well in public education. And we've all known that for some time. You ladies have been blogging about the Common Core standards. You're probably the two most well-informed ladies on Common Core standards and all of the educational reforms that go along with it that I've ever met or ever read. What do you think about all of these things? Gretchen.
Go ahead, Ann. It's hard to know where to start.
I know. There's so much. But basically, we know that the educational system in this country is basically nothing more than an indoctrination machine. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on in this country, education-wise, and there's a lot of rhetoric about how it needs to be reformed one way or another. Gretchen, you posted something in Missouri Education Watchdog a couple of weeks ago. Let's start with your why the left doesn't want a Common Core rescinded, and let's talk about eco dads.
Okay, basically Common Core, the capitalists like it because it gives them the private-public partnership. I mean, if you think of Solyndra, that's a perfect example.
It's an Agenda 21 buzzword, private.
Right, so, right. Yeah. And that's exactly what Common Core is, because when it all came about, there were already pre-selected vendors from the Department of Education as far as the assessments were going, the computers, all that sort of stuff. They were all pre-approved or pre-selected by Arne Duncan, Secretary of Education. There is a movement to everything, and it's the Agenda kind of 21 sort of deal about that public-private partnership. So the reason that you don't see a lot of, like Jeb Bush, all right, everybody, all the establishment Republicans are in love with Jeb Bush. He's not really a conservative Republican because he likes the control. He likes the top-down sort of money going to certain people. That's an Agenda 21 sort of thing. That's why the Republicans don't want Common Core rescinded, or I should say capitalists, but the left doesn't want Common Core rescinded, because I think it was December 8th was that particular post that I did, and the left capitalizes on the standards the capitalists are profiting from, and they're using the framework for their agenda. So I talked about these eco dads, and it's from the Environmental Education Initiative in California and beyond. And basically, they say more can and should be done to understand our relationship with the environment, and we believe the best place to begin is in California's classroom. So these eco-dads are spearheading a movement, in their words, to fix education, create a new economy, and inspire environmental stewardship. The eco-dads are creating and giving away free environmental edutainment apps based on the state's Common Core standards and the Next Generation Science standards. So what they're doing is that they're fixing education by using Common Core standards to push their particular message.
The Green Agenda.
Yes.
Which is...
I kind of think of it like the drug situation. The green agenda and the sustainability is kind of the heroin of the ideological left, and they have been able to get it in here and there. But what Common Core does is it puts a shunt in and it mainlines it into every single school.
Yeah, in every part of the curriculum, mm-hmm. really. So yeah, I mean, and we know that the ecology and the green agenda is the main driving force of Agenda 21, and it's in every aspect of your child's education. So tell me about these apps. How do these apps work?
Well, the apps, you're going to be able to just, you know, have it on your little iPhone, and let's see, they're going to be able to. The goal of, okay, I'm reading from it, the goal of these fun interactive apps is to put the curriculum into the hands of the students and give them access to all of the separate and valuable education resource providers. So,
providers that they have pre-screened and decided are the only people you need to read.
Bingo.
Right.
Bingo. Mm-hmm. So what you're doing is that they want to start this cultural revolution that honors nature, raises eco-literate children, and embraces the whole human community as one global family.
And it is a uniform message across every state, in every school in every state, in every classroom in every school in every state.
Yes, including Missouri.
Including Missouri. Because, now correct me if I'm wrong, have all 50 states been accepted the Common Core, or are there a couple that have not?
45 states, correct?
45.
Well, 46, but yeah, to different degrees in each of them, but yes, basically 45 have jumped in with both feet.
Right.
Okay, so that's frightening. So, you know, if there was ever any doubt, I mean, if you think about this whole Common Core situation, this is like tinfoil hat stuff, you know, kind of conspiracy theory, but this is real. This is real, and it's up on the internet for people to research. If you're not familiar by now with what Common Core is, it's a very real situation. It's been handed down from on high. It is part of the Race to the Top initiative that states were being awarded semi-funding to initiate Common Core curriculums throughout the country, and Missouri was denied that fund, or we were denied in our application for Race to the Top funding, but we adopted the standards anyway.
We adopted them because we wanted the waiver from the No Child Left Behind. So if you wanted the waiver that the Department of Ed said you don't have to do No Child Left Behind anymore, because really those goals are unattainable. 100% of children cannot be proficient. That's an impossible goal. So if you don't want to do that anymore, you're going to get the waiver from that, you're going to have to sign on to Common Core standards.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a caller on the line, Lynn, and Lynn has a student. She has an AP student who. She's been perusing through the curriculum of her AP student, and she has found some interesting information which kind of relates to what we're talking about here today as far as the indoctrination aspects. Welcome, Lynn. Thank you for being with us tonight.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
So Lynn, tell me, okay, so you have an AP high school student.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you have this AP high school textbook.
Mm-hmm.
And within this textbook, what have you found?
Well, actually, first of all, like the environmental and the science ones, I don't think anybody would even question that this permeates that particular topic. But what I wanted to read to you guys and tell you about that I think is very interesting is, like you said, it's in every classroom and every topic and every subject. And I was looking at some of the stuff in her Human Geography AP book. It was really interesting because it was like a new spin, and it's definitely an Agenda 21 thing where we want everybody concentrated in, you know, urban, you know, city areas and, you know, keep people kind of corralled. And they're talking about, like, community models and, well, it's basically suburbs bad, cities good, America models bad, European models good. I mean, it's literally like that. And, for example, they talk about suburban sprawl, and I'm just going to read this, has been cited as the cause behind a number of problems such as traffic congestion, shortfalls in public school funding, environmental degradation, and economic decline in farming. Talks about how there needs to be, like, anti-growth movements. They're already emerging in the United States, Canada, and Europe, and they're presented as positives. They talk about setting growth boundaries, set minimum maximum lot sizes for homes, things like that. And then what they do is they'll turn, you know, and there's just whole sections and units just on this alone. And they talk about different models that they think are positive models. Like they talk about the Canadian model where they're more focused on urban living. There's more multiple family apartment buildings, and all of these are all, they're presented that people who live in these kind of communities are happier people. They have more social stability. That's actually the words, allowing greater social stability, higher average incomes. So supposedly you make more money if you live in the city. You have less congestion, which I mean, all these things are actually kind of a contradiction to what I know, what my personal experience is. They talk about the energetic downtown, social life blending, affluent residential zones. Anyway, and they have large parks in the city, too. Anyway, I just thought it was very interesting that this is, I mean, I'm just reading to you right out of the book. And so
okay.
It is.
And this is an AP student. Okay, so this is not your average run-of-the-mill student. Okay, we have good students in high schools, but this AP is above and beyond. This is an accelerated curriculum student, getting college credit, and it's kind of a dual enrollment issue for curriculum here. Okay, and I kind of want to jump back to a point that I made when I talked to Ray here just a few minutes ago. Okay, this is indoctrination of the most heinous kind. Okay, we're indoctrinating even the AP students. There is no, you tell me, Lynn, do you see anything in there, in that curriculum or in that book that you just read from that offers the other side of the coin, the flip, you know, anything asking why, challenging the thought process, anything
else? No,
critical
thinking? No, you're just being spoon-fed, and you're expected to regurgitate back. And for AP, you got to circle in the bubble that they want you to see. Otherwise, you don't get your score and your credit. So, no, they just want you to regurgitate, you know, the perspective that they're pushing at the moment, which is this. So,
okay.
And this is a scary thing about a lot of the standardized testing and, you know, the AP. The ACT and SAT, you know, David Coleman has taken over as in charge of the College Board, and he was the one who drafted the ELA Common Core Standards. So even if you think I'm going to keep my kid home and homeschool him, or I'm going to send him to a private school, they're still going to have to jump through the Common Core hoop at some point.
Right, and this is evidence of it. And I just think as a mom with a kid, I mean, you know, you can listen to this, but when you have it right in your own hands, which I do, sitting in my dining room here, you know that what you guys are talking about is true. So I appreciate what you ladies are doing. Keep up the good fight. So
thanks, Lynn. Well, thank
know.
You.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. That's pretty scary if you ask me. I mean, I'm a homeschool mom. My youngest is getting ready to go to college. You know, she went through all the standardized testing, you know, and did well enough to get into a good college. Okay, future generations are not going to have that because my kids did not have the benefit, or if you want to call it that, of I chose the curriculum for my kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my kids would have missed out on all of that had they marched in to take their SATs and their ACT tests. They would have not had any of that because I would not have chosen that kind of curriculum. So, and as we talk about going back to the colleges and the indoctrination of the professors of teaching the future teachers, I mean, really, you know, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? You know, is it happening first in the colleges, do you know, or is it happening in the schools? Can you tell?
Well, I think Ray was absolutely right when he talked when he started talking about having the younger teachers and how the older teachers are not going to cozy up to this curriculum. And I think that a lot of the focus on, you know, teacher accountability is designed to get rid of those older teachers.
And that when we were having that conversation, what flashed through my head was the Teach for America issue. You want to talk a little bit about that, what the Teach for America folks are?
Gretchen, you want to take that one?
Yeah, well, Teach for America is basically where people go in with 5 weeks of training. They have an undergraduate degree, at least. It doesn't have to be in education. And they pay to go, they pay what? What is it, Ann, $9,000 or?
Well, they pay about $4,500 out of their own pocket.
Right, several thousand dollars. They're paid very little money. They have 5 weeks of training, and they go into these primarily inner-city schools. They're trying to expand it into rural areas and other areas. They are supposed to teach for 2 years, and they have a very prescribed way of teaching. The older teachers feel that, you know, they're being muscled out, that they're being told they're not good teachers, where you have a young person who has only 5 weeks of training on how to teach, now they have the job. Now, conservatives kind of have liked this because it goes against the teachers' unions. These people are not unionized. So conservatives kind of globbed onto it in the beginning because it kind of busted the teachers' union. However, if you look long-term, you're having these young people who have these ideals that may not necessarily fit with what the community thinks, but you're still getting that indoctrination or that message out that's a specific message.
Okay. I mean that can't be a good thing.
No,
you know?
And I do know that Students First, which is a big proponent of that, they were invited by the Republican legislators. I never could get a list of what legislators actually invited them. I asked under Sunshine Law, but I was not given that information. They were invited a year or two ago to come into Missouri, and now at last I looked, they had 4 paid lobbyists in Missouri.
4 paid lobbyists?
Yes, and they want to expand Students First and TFAers in the state.
Okay.
And if you really look into the statistics of Teach for America, they're not very encouraging, and they're also not terribly honest about their statistics. Their teachers don't stay in teaching much beyond their 2-year commitment for the most part. And a lot of them, if you look online and look at the message boards, you can find many, many of them complaining about how unprepared they were and how little support they got from TFA while they were in some of the most hardcore classrooms in the country.
Right.
That's just, it's frightening. And we're trying to put the best and the brightest in the classrooms to upgrade the level of education, which is so, you know, so sorely lacking here, and that's not helping us. So if, from a public-private partnership standpoint, why would we be promoting Teach for America? I mean, my mind is just reeling. I mean, I'm thinking of not only Teach for America, but parent trigger issues. We know that we've had legislation for parent trigger going on in across the country and in Missouri, and charter schools, all of these things, you know. Charter schools is another discussion that we need to have, too, because charter schools is a big part of the educational reform situation. We've talked about it before here, and we know that charter schools are private schools, and they will not be the fix.
No, charter schools are public schools. You said private schools.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes,
that's correct.
Yes, public schools. They will not be the fix to the educational problem because they will be subject to Common Core.
Right.
Okay. So,
yeah, I mean, I think Ann and I both agree that a lot of the problems that you're having in public education today is because there's no local autonomy at all. It's all been taken away. It's not even driven by the state anymore. It's now being driven by federal government and these public-private partnerships. So I think Ann and I both agree that a lot of the problems that you're trying to talk about, you cannot fix it with a centralized a fix. it can't happen. And I think, Anne, you would agree that the charters and the triggers and all the reforms that they're doing and that are costing a lot of money, it's just one big centralized nightmare.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about universal preschool. You've recently published a post, again, and that's another huge aspect of the educational reform that's being pushed through. And with Common Core, they want to put your children in, they want to increase or decrease the age from which your child leaves or begins going to institutional schooling and increase the age from which they leave it. So let's talk a little bit about the universal preschool issue.
Yeah,
Is you as a parent just don't know how to raise your child.
I was amazed at the quotes that were, if you have the opportunity, it was a December 9th post. If you have the opportunity to go and read this post from a Harvard educational expert.
Yeah, Dr. Hester Pierce.
And the quotes that they're saying about your kids, I'll just stop. I'll just let you ladies see this. It's just, I'm dumbfounded.
Yeah, that was back in, and I was shocked. I did not even know about this quote. This was back in 1973, and he addressed the Childhood International Education Seminar, and he said, "Every child in America entering school at the age of five is insane because he comes to school with certain allegiances to our founding fathers, toward our elected officials, toward his parents, toward a belief in a supernatural being, and toward the sovereignty of this nation as a separate entity. It's up to you as teachers to make all these sick children well by creating the international child of the future." There you have it.
Yeah, it's pretty plain.
That's it. That was back in 73.
So, I mean, this goes quite a bit farther beyond it takes a village to raise a child. They really don't want you to raise your child. Pretty much they want you to turn your children over almost at birth because you've ruined them in the early years, and now it's up to the institution and the government to fix them.
Yep.
Well, and they would say people like you with your values are ruining your child, but obviously your daughter's most recent success shows that is a complete red herring, that she can be homeschooled with your values and still do very well and be acceptable to the higher education community.
Yeah, for now. What's that going to look like in 10 years?
Oh, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what I'm worried about. You know, my kids got in under the wire. In 10 years, it's going to be a whole different story if people don't stand up and do something about this right now. So what is the issue? I mean, you know, we've watched public education, or we've watched the legislature try to deal with educational reform over the last several years. And they've already stated that this year legislation is going to be focused on more educational reform. What do you have to say about that?
Anne, I'll let you take that.
Well, you know,
you're copping out there, Gretchen.
So she doesn't explode. Well, you know, 93% of the schools in Missouri are doing very well, or at least well.
Because I'm not so sure that's true. Define well.
They have. By the general statistics, they have decent graduation rates. They have decent scores on the MAP test, which has been kind of the standardized test. You may disagree with what these current requirements are, but by the current requirements, our schools are doing generally well.
Okay.
And so really what we have is a problem with 7% of the schools in our state, and yet we are applying these fixes and Band-Aids and machinations to all of the schools.
Well, okay, but generally overall, I mean, we lag behind in math and sciences, and as far as industrialized nations go, we're not performing well in the world. So, you know, while we set these standards with MAP scores and other kinds of other kinds of testing and such, you know, I'm not sure we're doing well. You know, I mean, you can set a goal for yourself and you can reach a goal, but if it's, you know, I mean, if you're just not measuring up with the rest of the world, it doesn't mean much.
Well, it depends on how you're comparing us to the rest of the world. You know, I have heard testimony from teachers that went over to Singapore and said that on days that they had the testing, like the PISA tests that they like to compare us, these international benchmarks, that students who really struggled in school or who had some mental functioning issues, they had a field day that day. They didn't sit and take the test. We make all of our students take the test, which is something most other industrialized countries do not do. And so for us to score as well as we do with everybody taking the test is actually a testament to how good American education is.
And because we have inclusion in a lot of our schools, we have learning disabled kids, everybody, how many of those kids are included in the mix?
A surprising amount. I mean, we really bend over backwards to have those kids take the test. Just here in Missouri with the MAP test, you have to be very dysfunctional in order to be excused from taking the MAP test. There's some modified tests if you've got some minor degree of processing problems. But we make them all take it.
Okay. Okay, so let's get back to the universal preschool issue and the legislation that's coming down the pike.
Well, I know that a couple years ago they had the Educated Citizenry 2020.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everybody needs to look at that, and that was the draft education ideal that they had for Missouri in 2020. There was a call for universal preschool in that draft, although not all the senators signed on to that. There was some question about that. But that is a federal goal to have universal preschool for all children by 2020. In Kirkwood School District, there is the Kirkwood Education Early Childhood Center. They want to spend $825,000 to have preschool for 400, quote, at-risk students. Now, these would be free and reduced lunch and were learning disabilities. The problem is the goal that different studies have shown that preschool is good for English as second learner, English as, second language learners, and children with disabilities. Those two groups, it is very important for them. The other groups, it's just like the Head Start. Head Start, for four decades, has just not, by third grade, any gains that those kids have made, they drop off. So my contention is, and hopefully we're going to have a study come out of Missouri here within the next month or a few months or a year, showing that if it's not propped up by the home, you know, the education primarily, first off, comes from the home. And so if parents aren't talking to children, if parents aren't propping children up, not encouraging them, it really doesn't matter so much or how much the school does or even how early, because those kids are just going to drop behind.
Regardless of what Dr. Pierce says in your post.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's the total antithesis of what we've always been told about how to get your child to succeed educationally, parents advocating for their own children's education. You know, Harvard-educated experts don't believe that that's the case anymore. So, and that's the bus that's being driven with Common Core and nationalized preschool.
Right, right.
So you can probably
wait to try, and it's going to come to your school district. And how much is it going to cost? And what is the intent? And I think that if you look at the factual statistics for preschool, and you know its lasting effects, except for a couple groups, I don't really know financially and socially if it's worth it. Now, it will free women to go back into the workforce.
There you go. It's all about generating tax revenue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think has been the issue for decades and decades, even through the women's movement. It's about putting women to work, getting them out of the home and putting them to work to generate the tax revenue.
Well, that's what Nancy Pelosi had said. It was a post that I did several months or a year ago, and she said that was the whole idea of caring for, have the government caring for children from the time they were born, so it would free women up so they could go back to work and it would generate more tax revenue.
Okay, it's all pretty simple. I think we've got it figured out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, ladies, are there any other bombshells off on the horizon that we need to be watching out for? I mean, this is just, we've been kind of covering this for a couple of years and watching this develop. Common Core standards are a fact here in Missouri, so if you are a Missourian, and in 45 other states, Common Core standards are a fact in your schools. There's no getting around it. The government is controlling the educational curriculum. So if you think you can go to your school board and tell them that you don't like the curriculum that little Johnny's coming home with, there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. And it's all about bringing in revenues and putting women back to work, and it's a public-private partnership of your tax money through education. Okay.
Yep, that's pretty much it.
All right. Ladies, thank you so much. We really appreciate you being with us tonight and giving us the scoop on all of these educational issues. If you haven't had the opportunity to go to Missouri Education Watchdog, every day they've got new information about what's going on and how it's affecting your school and your neighborhood and your children. Go to MissouriEducationWatchdog.com and read the latest. Subscribe to their link so that you can get their feed every day. You won't be sorry. It's very enlightening. And again, it's all roads lead to Agenda 21, and it's absolutely happening in your schools. So thank you, Ann and Gretchen. We appreciate you being with us. Merry Christmas to both of you ladies. Thank you so much.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Lisa. Merry Christmas.
Okay, folks, we're going to wrap it up here tonight. We really appreciate you being with us again this week on Missouri Grassroots Radio, and we're wishing you all a very Merry Christmas and a very Happy New Year. We will be adding a couple of new programs to our lineup after the first of the year, like I said earlier. Cindy McGee will be with us on Tuesday evenings from 7 to 8, and she'll be followed up by Cynthia Davis. We all know her as the latest candidate for lieutenant governor in the last election. Cynthia was a Constitutional Party candidate there, and she will be spending an hour with us on Tuesday evenings from 8 to 9. And Monday evenings will always be with us Dave Court, Mr. Hour of Truth. And Thursdays will be Kevin Harned, with Hillbilly Logic, and we hope to be bringing you additional programming. We're working really hard here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition to kind of expand our radio programming to you. Please don't forget to go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and sign up for our Grassfire alerts, and hit the Join tab so that you can get our email alerts as well. And that's going to wrap it up for us this week. We're 5 days away from Christmas. We're all excited about it. We hope you have your Christmas shopping done. And we will be here again next week with you with some more enlightening interviews and some wrap-ups for the year of 2012 and looking forward to 2013. And until next week, we will see you then.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.